Why don't we, I mean, so should we start recording then?
I'm recording already, dude.
Oh. Basically, today we're doing something a little different, and we're going to be answering some, we'll call them listener questions, but since the podcast isn't live yet, these are not people who've listened to it, but they're folks who ask questions when I did an Ask Me Anything on bootstrappers.io, and I am never surprised that I get so many questions about the mental side of it, the psychological side of it, the motivational side of it. You know, what should you aspire to? What do you do when you've kind of lost the motivation to keep going and that kind of stuff? I pulled out four of those that I felt like both of us would have some insights into, and we're going to talk about those today. Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
So the first one is from Tyler Tringas, and it reads, you've mentioned before, directed to Rob, that you have no interest in building a big startup that changes the world because you value time, family, flexibility more. Definitely respect that. Is there some kind of substitute for that aspirational goal in your own life or in the stay small strategy? What should entrepreneurs who stay small strive for beyond monthly recurring revenue?
You know, my thoughts on that are basically that you need to find out what drives you and what makes you happy, because money doesn't make people happy. It's what money can buy that makes people happy. In terms of, and when I say buy, I mean freedom, essentially. The ability to have control over your time and your income and your location. So that's kind of the first thing that I've aspired towards. It was to be able to move where I wanted to, work when I wanted to, and to be able to some effect, control my own income. The second thing that I strive for is a sense of purpose. And to be honest, when I first launched products, and I was working on my own and I didn't have a boss anymore, it was great. And within 6 months, I found that I didn't have much purpose at work. And that was actually pretty hard. And then I had to figure out what that was. Like, why am I doing this? Because I was covering the bills, but I wasn't enjoying what I was doing. And for me, I took StrengthsFinder 2.0 and, you know, a couple other of those kinds of tests. And I learned that learning is a huge deal. Learning and creating new things, it gives me a lot of purpose. And so if I'm not doing that, then my purpose drifts and I find myself in a bit of a mental crisis. So I'm always trying to focus on that. And your purpose obviously may be different.
And your purpose might be a big startup that changes the world.
That's right.
I mean, I think there are really big problems and people who have great ideas about how to make changes to those problems. More power to them. I mean, I think that there's such a breadth of what people find purpose in and what's valuable that, you know, Rob's particular definition of what he's found to be purposeful definitely, you know, doesn't apply to everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a good point about it being, you know, it could be that a big startup is actually your purpose. You know, part of my purpose is to basically be around and available for you and the kids. And this is one of the reasons I've worked less than full time for several years, because I want to be around when they grow up.
I think for me, having spent a lot of time with people who are really struggling and suffering in their lives, it becomes, I guess, a little bit simple in the sense that you just can't spend a lot of your life, a lot of your time doing something that you don't care about. When you do that, when you're stuck in that hamster wheel, you feel it. You know, you aren't connected to anybody. You aren't happy. You aren't satisfied. You're burnt out. You're depressed. You know, figuring out what really drives you and what really you love, what brings you joy, what brings you a sense of exhilaration and fun. Obviously, you're not going to live there all the time in your work life, but to have elements of that in whatever you're doing, whether it's a big startup or a little startup or walking away from your startup and doing something else, that is what will make your life valuable to you, what will make your life interesting. And I think ultimately, when you look back on your life, will help you to feel that you are satisfied with what you've done with your time.
That's the hardest part, is what you just said, is figuring out what it is that makes you happy in an almost abstract sense. Because when you have infinite possibilities, it's so hard to know what's going to make you happy, especially when there's this script that's been written for us as entrepreneurs. The script is start, everybody's talking, build a big startup that's going to change the world. That may be your happiness. But what I've seen is a lot of folks who, and this is purely anecdotal, but it's conversations with founders who I've seen who've exited, you know, who've sold their company. They had really rough years while they were growing it. They were unhappy. It was agonizing. A couple of them got divorced over it, and then they walked away with $5 million, and now they're quote unquote set for life. But now they're in this same seeking of purpose, right? Because their purpose for that while was growing that business, and now that it's gone, and they've achieved that goal that we all talk about, you know, having the big exit. What do you do then? And then you have to basically reboot, start over, and figure out what is it that's going to drive me long term.
You know, as a psychologist, one of the things that I find really interesting is the connection between who we are as adults and who we were as children. You know, assuming you had a relatively healthy, stable environment when you were growing up, if you look back at who you were, you get really great hints about what brings you purpose and satisfaction later in your life. You know, if you were a kid that did a lot of creative work, or if you were a kid who really loved to play with friends and do a lot of imaginative work, that can give you some hints about what motivates you. And I think if you take the time to look back at some of your early memories, a memory of being really joyful, think about what you were doing, who was around, what made that so satisfying to you as a child. And that can give you some clues as to, you know, what you might be seeking as an adult. No, we're pretty hardwired. We show up on the earth with things that we're drawn to, ways that we're made, and getting back to our essential selves, you know, our true self, is a big part of figuring out how to have a satisfying life.
I think another couple ways that I've kind of tuned into who I am and what drives me are to do these retreats. And we have another episode we've recorded about doing retreats. But I think having a retreat and taking 48 hours and saying what gave me life over the last year and what sucked life out of the last year, the more you do those every year, you get a better sense of who you are and what it is that makes you happy and what you want to do more of. And not just follow this path that you've started down or a path that someone else told you to go down. You know, when they say, yeah, you're going to have fun doing this, go do this. This looks really fun when I read about it in a magazine, but you don't know that yet. You know, the more you know yourself, the better off you are in this journey and the better off that you're able to figure out what are those aspirational goals as Tyler originally asked about.
So the second question is from Brandy Young, and she writes, what advice would you give someone who has seen moderate success and then lost it? Someone who has had a taste of the lifestyle they're after and is now back at step one. Specifically, what can you do when you know what you should be doing and you have the skill set to get it done, but you just can't muster the oomph to actually do it again?
It pains me to hear about, you know, achieving moderate success and then losing it. I think we've all done that. And I know that it's hard to get to kind of muster the energy to do it again. The way I thought through it was I said, you know, I know this feeling. I run into it every year or two, not the part about having it and losing it, just about kind of losing your motivation and feeling lost. When this happens, I try to back off. I try to step away from work. I actually stop listening to like tactical startup podcasts. And I try to give my entrepreneurial mind a rest. If I can go on a retreat, I do it. And I take that 48 hours and really think through what's going on and where I want to head next and what changes that I need to make in order to feel excited again. And for me, that often means maybe switching focus from doing a lot of product management and managing, you know, one app, maybe switching to a different app. Or maybe it means from switching from product management to doing marketing. Or maybe it means switching from marketing to working more on my personal brand side and doing more blogging and writing and teaching, right? It's just, it often for me means mixing things up. I'm not sure if that's going to be for everyone. But what I try to do is ease off that throttle for however long it takes to get my motivation back, which typically is a few months. For me, it's like there's a difference between short-term lack of motivation and the longer-term ones. And the short-term stuff, if I come in on a given day and I'm not motivated, then I use tactics. But in the longer term, you have to have that full bucket in order to start the journey again.
And I think before you talk about how to rekindle that motivation, this process of really ending what is ended, if the startup has failed or the app is dead, that's a significant loss. And I think that there's a lot of grief that goes along with that. There's a lot of feelings about failure and what went wrong, and really taking time to grieve, you know, to honor the fact that you spent a lot of time doing something, you put a lot of yourself into something, and ultimately it didn't succeed. Letting that be a real thing before sort of brushing that under the rug and running off and starting something else. I think if you don't kind of deal with that loss and the grief and all the emotion that goes along with it, you're going to be trying to outrun it in your next app. It'll be sort of a rebound app. And you might not be fully present or fully able to get your oomph back until you have really allowed yourself to grieve for the one that's lost. And that might mean taking a little bit of time away or refocusing, as Rob has said, something that really, you know, like I said, honors what was lost and how you feel about it.
Almost like a funeral.
Yeah.
Kind of being able to say goodbye. I've heard of some place, I'm trying to think it was like some startup incubator in New York. When the startups fail within the group, they kind of have a service, and they're trying not to be like disrespectful to, you know, people who are actually dying, but they're basically trying to do that, kind of laying it to rest and letting people have the grief period, and then they get to do kind of a postmortem and talk about it. You know, they do a presentation and they say, this is what happened, this is what went right, this is what went wrong, and then they basically put it to rest. You know, and I think they celebrate the fact that people tried, and they all try to learn from the mistakes, really. And then they were able to move on. That could be an interesting way to have some closure on it.
Right. Because Brandy describes it as not having the oomph. But, you know, my question is why not? You know, is there a lot of lingering disappointment or that sting of failure? Is there some self-blame going on? Is there shame about having had success and then lost it and all the identity pieces that go along with that? Why isn't the oomph there? And really taking the time to look at it. I think another helpful question can be, what was really motivating you the first time around, and how is that different now? It might be different. It might not be the same thing the second time around. Kind of like we talked about with Tyler's question, reconnecting to your source of motivation and the thing that you want for this new phase, this new part of your life, and this new app that you're working on. All right. Question number three. You ready for that?
I am.
All right. This one is from Naveen. And right, I have a good problem, and there are a few people who can relate and who I can ask this question to. My recurring revenue now significantly exceeds my lifestyle expenses. I found that I was most excited and did my best work when I was hungry or was in the pursuit of achieving this financial freedom goal. After attaining financial freedom, how would you recommend reframing what motivates you? What resources would you advise someone in such a situation to review?
And this ties into the first question from Tyler, where I had said, I strove for freedom first, and I feel like that's what you need to get to. But once you get to freedom, which is what Naveen has, then you need to find that purpose. And purpose is coming, that it comes back to that StrengthsFinder 2.0 or whatever process you're going to use to figure out who you are and what drives you beyond just freedom and money. The only resource that I recommended that I haven't already talked about in this particular question is I like Chris Guillebeau's Art of Nonconformity, because he talks about having a legacy and he talks about thinking differently about things. So if you haven't read that, that's probably a good one. And then there is a book called A Guide to the Good Life that kind of got my gears turning on what else there is aside from building our businesses. But what are your thoughts on this?
So I like this concept of hunger, of what you're longing for and what you're chasing. And the number in your bank account shouldn't have to get in the way of that. I think if you have excess revenue, great, live on what you need and reinvest the rest. It doesn't have to sit there. It can be an impetus for more and different activities. So a new version of hunger that might involve angel investing or mentoring or, you know, taking enough money where you can live comfortably, have a good cushion in your savings, and then using that money that's extra to start a new company or reinvest or keep alive and keep active rather than having the monetary success be something that lets you get stagnant.
I really like that suggestion. I think that, you know, if you've hit the point where you're obviously living on what you have and then the bank balance is just piling up, and let's say you get, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 of cash in the bank and you already are saving for retirement, it's easy to ask that question, what's next? You know, you don't want to buy a Ferrari or you don't want to make stupid financial decisions. And you want to find out what's next for you, what fulfills you. I think that, like you said, angel investing or somehow starting to mentor other entrepreneurs can be a really good avenue for that. Whether you're an advisor or whether you're taking some of that money and putting it to work, that can get your hunger back. I think another way to do it could be to ask, well, do you want to continue running your current business? Do you want to maybe sell that and try to do something bigger? You know, would that be interesting? I'm not saying that's necessarily the right choice, but it's something to evaluate, right? Is to either hire a manager of your current business and then move on to something, or to sell it outright, take the cash off the table, and then start something new. Now, that's a whole nother journey, and you have to have the oomph in order to be able to grow that. But that is definitely the tact that some folks take. That's the one I've taken, and it's worked out, you know, for the most part, it's worked out, although I think with this most recent one, I have pushed it a little too far, and maybe I'd do a couple things differently.
If you are longing for the pursuit and you want to be excited about the work again, then it sounds like the current arrangement isn't working, and the excess money shouldn't be something that stands in your way. That should be the ticket to something different or something new. So many of these questions are about how fluid our ideas of success are. Naveen's obviously been really successful monetarily and now is kind of striving for satisfaction or success in his internal world. It reminds me of the conversation that we had about arrival and how it's not static. It's not permanent. There is a moment of arrival where something is successful. Hooray, we celebrate. Then you're ready for the next thing.
Yeah, that feeling of happiness and success and accomplishment lasts for a short time. And I think being prepared for that, that even the day you launch your product, the day your product hits X thousand a month per revenue, the day you quit your job, the day, you know, you hire your first employee, all these are great milestones, but they do come and go. And while you should celebrate them, you have to figure out what's next. And that's that question that I've asked myself over and over. And originally, I used to kind of ask it in jest, and then we saw The West Wing, and President Bartlet would say in meetings, he'd say, what's next? Like he wants to, you know, move to the next thing. That's what I've realized is it's kind of a big question, I think, in a lot of our lives. Those of us who don't, you know, who aren't going to work the same kind of 9-to-5 for 20, 30, 40 years, I think you have to be asking yourself what's next as soon as you become unhappy with your current situation.
I guess I'm thinking about when there is a time when there's not a what's next, when you're done.
Yeah.
Because I've also seen that backfire when people reach a point in their life where they're at the end of their life and they're still asking what's next. And it's like, what's next is hang out with your grandkids and relax.
Well, that's
so it's also about learning how to step in and out of the pursuit.
But I think you've made the assumption there that your what's next, it impinges on your other life, that you've kind of worked your whole life in order for your what's next to be a retirement. But I'm saying, like with the freedom purpose relationship thing, I'm saying that during my life, since I only work 30 hours a week, I'm hanging out with my family, or I would be hanging out if it was, you know, 20 years from now, I'm hanging out with a grandkid while I'm asking what's next. I guess if you're working 60 hours, 70 hour weeks, and you keep asking what's next, I can see how you should just stop at some point.
Or you're not asking what's next in only one domain of your life. It's not only in your work life.
That's right.
It's a broad question.
Yes.
What's next for me, for my personal growth, for my relationships, for my work, for my family, for my...
I think that's a key distinction.
All right, ready to tackle the last question?
Yeah.
This is from Harishi Mittal. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. One of my favorite parts about your new documentary about launching Drip was the bit where you start to doubt that it's going to work at all, but still persevere through it. Did you have a time frame in mind up to which you were going to keep trying? More generally, how long do you recommend keeping working on an idea before moving on if it doesn't work?
Yeah, and the way I answered that, basically I said, though, you know, I thought back and remembered that those days were a mental struggle, even more so than comes across in that audio documentary. I had a lot of turmoil going on. I didn't have a time frame in mind for how long I was going to do it. I was planning to basically brute force it until it either worked or until I was sure it had no chance of working, essentially until I probably burned myself out on it.
So you're, sorry to interrupt you, but your version of it has no chance of working is about burnout? It's about an internal state? Like,
I think it's more about, it's partially about internal, but so here's the thing. I don't tend to burn out if things are growing because I'm so highly motivated by growth in customers and revenue. And so if it kept growing, even if I was still had some turmoil, that growth like helps assuage that feeling. So my internal state is correlated to the growth. And so if it didn't grow for a long time, I would eventually burn out on it. And this is funny. It sounds almost ridiculous as I'm saying it. I talked to two other founders in the last couple of weeks almost on this exact same topic, and they were talking about how their motivation is highly linked to the growth of their app. I mean, this is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life. And looking at that monthly recurring revenue is a big part of what drives us. And I should add that I was receiving signs of hope along the way that this thing was working, right? It was slower than I would have liked, and that's why I was kind of agonizing over it and having that internal mental struggle. But the signs of hope were customers saying they liked it, and then, you know, the revenue growing. And I was planning to just do it until I couldn't do it anymore. I think if I had set a time frame.
So the length of time isn't as important as the cost, maybe the mental, emotional cost of continuing to work on something that's not loving you back, that's not growing.
Okay. Yep, that's right. It's like when I reach the end of my rope.
So what other data do you look at besides growth?
What other data is there? I mean, that's your number.
It sounds like you're looking at customer responses and feedback.
Yeah, but those are just little signs. If you get all the positive feedback in the world and you're not growing, you just feel like, I mean, this isn't a business that charges money to other people, right? So if you were doing a business to consumer app, then that would just be customer growth. Like, oh my gosh, 100 people a day, 200 people a day are signing up, you know? It invigorates you. It's like anything. Like when you're a kid, if you go to play soccer and the results are that you're not very good at it, you tend to not be motivated to do that. But if you go play baseball and you happen to be exceptional at it and you get all this positive feedback, it really motivates you. And so that success feeds back into motivation. And if you try to do something, like I played football in high school, and frankly, I wasn't that great at it. I'm just not built for football. And so
you were a linebacker, right?
I was a linebacker. No, I was a wide receiver. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I played the games. I started every game, but I didn't enjoy it. And I wasn't as good as I wanted to be. And so all the time that I put in there kind of burned me out on doing it. And I lasted 2 years, but running track, I was much better. And for running track, I was able and willing to put in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours because the feedback loop was that I was getting better and that I received, you know, accolades and that I had successes and that I had wins. And I think it's the same thing here. I think that monthly recurring revenue or that user growth or whatever your single metric is of your business is that feedback loop. That's that first place win at a track meet.
And some of the question is how long you can tolerate the curve.
Yep.
How long you can go playing football without really getting any better.
That's right. And how long can you push an app that isn't growing? And I don't know. I mean, I could throw out an estimate or how long I thought until I was going to burn out, but it really does depend on which feedback you're getting. Because even if it's not growing, if you have some positive feedback coming in, then that's enough to kind of keep you going for longer.
Also, you know, masterminds are a big part of these kinds of decisions for you. You have regular contact with a group of trusted advisors who, you know, help give you ideas, but I think would also be part of the conversation about how long is too long and how long should I keep going? What else should I try?
Absolutely.
So you don't make these decisions purely internally.
No.
You wouldn't give up on an app purely because you were frustrated. You talk to people, you look at the data.
That's right. I would talk to you and I would talk to, I'm in two masterminds, and I would bring all the data to, that's a total of five people, including you. And I would say, look, this is what's going on and I don't know what else to do. You know, if I was at the end of my rope, what do you think? Should I back away? And then I would talk about how hard it is to back away, right? Because you're kind of giving up. It feels like you wasted your time. I think that would be the hard part. It's sunk cost fallacy, right? Of like, I don't want to walk away because I have all this sunk cost. So it would be a hard decision for sure.
I mean, I remember you coming home thinking, oh my God, this isn't going to work.
Yeah. But I didn't think that for long enough to make me stop.
It was a couple of days.
Exactly. Right. And that's important. If I came home for 6 months saying that, I wouldn't have been able to keep going.
Me either.
It was a couple days, right? You don't want to hear it. And I would have told my mastermind guys, look, here's the data. It's not work because there's no growth. What happened, what was interesting is although, you know, we launched in November and then it was basically flat revenue for about 6 or 7 months. And so you could say, boy, that's a long time to be flat and not be growing. But during that time, we had, I don't remember, 100 something users, and they were basically saying, if you build this, I'll stick around. Or if you build this, I'll actually move my entire list from this other provider and therefore be paying you more money. So there was a clear path to growth. It just took us months to build it. You know, it was a lot of development effort. So from the outside, it might look like if you looked at just a purely a revenue graph, you'd say, wow, how did he persevere during that time? But really, it was about 30 to 60 days of disorientation, being like, well, where do we go next? How do we grow this thing? It's not growing. And then it was like, oh, if we do these certain things that are going to take a couple months, I really think it could grow. And maybe that was foolish, you know, in retrospect, it wasn't because it worked. But if you think about it, I was basically betting the farm that, you know, if we built a few more features that it would then grow. I think if we did build those features and it did start growing, and that's what kicked it in. But if we had built them and spent that 6 months and then no one showed up and it was still flatlined, that would have been devastating. And I don't know what I would have done at that point. I probably would have had that conversation with you and the four mastermind people about, here's where I am. Should I do one more round is probably would have been the question. Or should I throw in the towel?
Should we plan the drip service?
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, Drip had, I mean, to be honest, Drip had almost pretty much a full-time income for one person at that point. It was just flat, though. It wasn't going to grow. So it wasn't like I would have shut it down. It would have just been, I'm not going to
just sit there
investing. Exactly.
Yeah.
Not going to continue to try to grow this thing. So
it's a complicated question because there's so much emotion involved.
That's right.
And so listening to the emotion to a certain point, you know, how burnt out are you? How much is it really costing you emotionally? But then combining that with the data, combining that with counsel from trusted people, kind of all of those things together need to be part of making a decision. It's tricky because the emotion is part of it, but you also have to make a relatively emotionally detached decision when you do decide to shut it down.
I definitely think you do. Say the problem with making an emotional decision is that as you're trying to build a business, your emotions are like a roller coaster. They go up, they go down, and you can't make decisions based on those. You can't make permanent changes based on temporary emotion. And so that's why, I mean, this would be a major change, right? If you're going to shut your app down or walk away from it or whatever. That is a permanent solution to a temporary, could be a permanent solution to a temporary issue, or it may be the right choice for you. You have to get some distance from it for sure. Some emotional detachment would be good. And that's, like you said, that's where you go to your advisors because they do have less emotional attachment to it. They can give you that sanity check that you need.
Hey, the spouses out there, can we get a shout out about the emotional roller coaster?
Yeah, indeed.
I love it. I hate it. I love it. I hate it.
This is the best thing ever. I'm going to shut it down. Yeah.
Keeps life interesting, though.
Building anything like that's...
Doing anything hard.
Yeah. I remember thinking this when I was playing sports in college. Like, oh, I love it. This is so much fun. And then, you know, you get hurt or you lose a race or something. And it's like, I'm going to quit. I hate this. Why do I do this? Why do I spend 30 hours a week running, you know?
Yeah.
I think anytime you invest that much time into anything, you want to be successful all the time. And when you are, it's fantastic. And when you aren't, it can
hurts.
Be devastating.
Yeah. All right. Well, these are interesting questions. It's cool that people took the time to send them to you. I am looking forward to some listener questions once we actually move this thing live and it feels more like we're interacting with actual people besides you and I continuing to just talk back and forth to each other.
I agree. If folks have questions, they should email us at questions@zenfounder.com and we will probably answer them on the air. We might even design a whole episode around your question if it's a good one.
But not if it's lame.
Mm-mm.
Like, we can't end with that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.